This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with another Zvot of Parshas Vayayashev. The Bayim Ma'am Chaim, discussing where Yosef HaTzadik is going looking for his brothers. So he met up with Malach Gavriel, who sees that he looks a little lost. He says, what are you looking for? He tells him he's looking for his brothers. He says, we see the tzidkus of Yosef HaTzadik. Right? His father sent him on a journey, on a mission. And, you know, he wanted to be Mekayim Kibbut Vayim, even though it was very dangerous for him to go meet his brothers. But when you think about it, he could have just been Yoitza with going to Shechem. His father said, go to Shechem, see how they're doing. He went there, and he didn't find them. He could have come home and said, I didn't find them, Tati. In the meantime, he went, and he said, the Rebbe Ma'am Chaim says, even if his brothers wouldn't have hated him, just being, you know, on the roads, the way it was then at least, it wasn't too safe to travel, he could have come home and say, listen, I did mine. But he didn't do that. He wanted to be Mekayim, the mitzvah. He wanted to be Mechabed, his father. And he just kept on going. He kept on going. And he wouldn't stop. And that's why Hashem sent him a malach to go help him. And the Rebbe Ma'am Chaim explains that we see v'im tzu'ai ish v'inasoy. The malach asked him, what are you looking for? Now usually when somebody's looking for something, he doesn't wait for somebody to ask him, what are you looking for? He goes over and asks people, you know, maybe you saw my brothers. And he says, Yosef HaTzadik was so mishtagaya, Batoya Basuda, he was looking for his brothers with such intensity, let's call it, that he didn't even see what's going on around him. Like when somebody's looking for something, he doesn't notice what's going on around him. He's just looking for that thing, and as long as he doesn't notice it, he's oblivious to anything else. And that's why this malach came over and had to ask him, what are you looking for? Okay, a beautiful limud in general, Kibbut Avayim, and Mekayim on Roots in Hashem, and the idea of Lufnim Mishir Sadin. And so often when it comes to Shulam Bayis and marriage and different relationships, even in Gashmias, let's just start with the technical and the basics. So often people are crossing off their checklist. They did what they had to do, they fulfilled, they did their duties, they did what they had to do, they came home, they did this, they did that errand, they did this chore, and you know, they're good. They did what they had to do. And so often what the other person is really looking for is just do the little extras and show me that you really care. Now, does a person have to? Well, no. The nature of something that's l'fnim mishir hadin, something that's above the call of duty, is that you don't have to. But that's exactly the point that sometimes people are really looking for. Do you care about me? Do you want to do what you... Do you want to make me feel good? Do you want to show me that you care? Or are you just doing what you have to? Now, I don't mean to justify those who use this card and say, well, you don't really care about me. If somebody's doing what they have to, then perhaps they do care about you. They don't necessarily have to care about you the way you want them to care about you, and you can't necessarily call someone out on not doing enough just because they didn't do what you wanted them to do. But caring for someone else and showing that you really want, when you're not just doing what you have to, like Yosef HaTzadik did for his father, he went the extra mile and showed that he really cared to bring back the good regards from his brothers. That's something we could all learn from. When it comes to Rachnias as well, caring for the people that we love and their Rachnias. Now, I know that somebody else's gashmias should be your rachnias, and we shouldn't be each other's mashgichim. The point is not to be on top of someone and control their bechira and make sure they do everything right. But caring about the other person, that is something that we should do. Sometimes people see their loved ones making bad choices, and they don't care. It comes from that apathy of, listen, this is your life, your thing, your journey, your struggle. And even where they could have given a certain amount of chizik or help, they just don't do it because they really don't care. And they say they don't care. It doesn't mean that they really don't care, but it means that they want to feel absolved of any kind of responsibility. And sometimes this is also something where you may not have to care. You may not have to take part in somebody else's struggle. And when I say rachnias, it could be sometimes, you know, even just mental and emotional is also rachnias. It's also things that aren't necessarily technical or material. And so often showing that we care and we want to do it for someone, and then trying to figure out how and how much and when and in what context to do it, that's something that could really build relationships and be a help one for another with Hashem's help. So let me read a question here. Dear Bagruin, I have a general question. Maybe you can address it. We know that after 120, husband and wife will be at the same place. So my question is, if a husband isn't doing so well spiritually, he has many ups and downs, and I know that someone who struggles more is a bigger tzaddik, but does that mean that if he will get punished, so will I? I try being here for him and encourage him a lot, and he did, Baruch Hashem, become a lot healthier, but I'm starting to think that maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe I shouldn't care so much about how he's doing all the time. Maybe I shouldn't try to find him a Rav when I feel like he needs more guidance and someone to be there for him more. I want to know where to draw the line. Also, who said that I'm doing the right thing by staying married to him? I mean, I want to do Hashem's will, and it's just not so clear what Hashem's will is for me. I know this question sounds ridiculous because he is an amazing father and husband most of the time, and I appreciate him a lot. I just think that seeing an answer on paper will clear out things for me. Please let me know when I can listen to the answer on Torah anytime. Okay. Wonderful question. I'll start off by saying that this is a bit vague, and it's not very clear how amazing most of the time your husband is, what kind of ups and downs in terms of struggle he has, what you've been doing to decide if it's too much. And the reason I'm saying this is because I had a few situations already where I address a question, and I'm always careful to say that obviously I don't know more than I'm reading and I'm not taking responsibility for anything specific, but then people come to me and say, you know, I sent him that question and you addressed it as if you were talking about such a situation, but really my situation is so different. Now, again, I don't know. Sometimes people make it sound like it's one way and really it's something else. In this case, it's not sounding like anything because I really don't know. And obviously so much of any kind of answer would have to depend on just clarifying what's really happening over here. Okay? So let's start from the beginning. You start off saying that we know that after 120, husband and wife will be at the same place. I don't know what you mean at the same place. Probably not at the same time, right? They're very often husband and wife reach 120 at different times, if they ever reach it. But we probably will all be going upstairs in Mitzvah to Shemayim. But to be in the same place as if we share a home or a room over there, I'm not sure where you got that information from. I don't know. I don't remember coming across anything that says that people necessarily end up in the same place just because they share a life's journey together. In general, there's a big discussion of its own, but the fact that we interpret everything spiritual in our own context of ideas and understanding and comprehension is always a big mistake. In this world, we could share a bedroom, we could share an apartment, we could share a lot of different things, we could share a car, we could go together, be together. In the world to come, you know, we use these terms as being in the same place, we use these terms of being together or seeing each other and you know, things like that, but it doesn't work like that. Everything spiritual, everything that is not in this world, already time and place just has a whole different idea, and we don't understand what it means. So if you mean to say, aside from the fact that I never heard such a thing, that husband and wife literally end up in the same place, so to speak, but that place is not the place that we're talking about here anyway, and it's just something to understand that we can't really relate to what really happens in Shemayim. I doubt that it's actually true, though, that two people, just because they got married and they shared life's journey together and they tried, you know, living life together, doesn't mean that upstairs in Shemayim they have the same judgment and the same path and the same future. I don't think so. I think we all have our own journey, and I think we all have our own set of Schar V'Oinish and whatever it is that we all in Mitzvah will one day get to. It's hard to say that it's shared, especially when two people each have their own personal choices in life. Now, there are parts of marriage that are shared. There are parts of our journey in life that are shared, whether it's the things that we did do together and helped each other with, and maybe the children that we have and leave over in this world, and all the good things that a couple does together. And I assume that on some level, that is shared in the world to come as well. But again, I have no idea what this looks like up there, and I don't think that it means that everything is just together and that if one will get punished for something, the other one will as well, or vice versa. There are ideas and stories about a Rebbe being with his Talmud or a Talmud being with his Rebbe, and if this one didn't go to Gehenna, the other one was pulling him out. But again, I don't think we know what this really means, and certainly not in a typical situation where just husband and wife, because they were married, automatically are sharing a future. In general, I think that the commitment that husband and wife have to each other is to help each other. Now, if a wife is responsible for the fact that her husband did something wrong, then yeah, maybe that part of their journey was actually shared and will be accountable together. But if somebody's not responsible for somebody else's bad choices, on the contrary, they even tried to make their spouse do the right thing in the healthiest way possible and didn't work, to assume that they'll be held responsible for that is hard to believe. When I talk about being responsible for somebody else's bad choice, it's just interesting how, like a lot of things in life, and I talk to people often, and I hear this so often, the people that I feel, at least, just from listening, objectively, listening to people, the people that I feel are less responsible for something are usually the people that will take responsibility quicker and be quicker to blame themselves for something that's happening. And the people that are more responsible, very often, are the ones that are less to blame themselves and slower to take responsibility. And it goes together, obviously, because the more someone takes responsibility, the more careful he is. And that's why he's less to blame, usually. And the person who's taking less responsibility automatically is less careful, because he's anyway absolving himself of any guilt or blame. And automatically, he might be doing things that are contributing to things that are happening and they shouldn't. So it's just interesting to see how people who are sometimes more afraid that maybe I'm responsible for someone else's bad choices are usually less responsible. And the people that are saying this has nothing to do with me are very often somewhat more responsible. I can't say that that's something they could always go by, but it's food for thought. So in general, any couple, any husband, any wife, any parents and children, and anyone in general, Kol Yisrael Arayim Zeh LaZeh, it's always good to just take into account that maybe we could be having a good influence on someone, and maybe we should be doing things that could help other people. But on the other hand, not necessarily are we always to blame or part of someone else's bad decisions and choices. One more thing, just because I'm talking about the shared part of our journeys as a couple, you mentioned something about finding him a Rav when he needs guidance. Again, obviously, if it's a problem that he needs help with, he might need his own help, and maybe there's a Rav that could help him. But in general, a couple should be having a Rav together and getting guidance together. And this is another point of conflict sometimes where, oh, that's what your Rav told you, but that's nothing to do with me, or I'm not obligated to take the guidance that someone gave you. And the fact that two people are being guided by two different people is sometimes the cause of a problem. Now, each person can have the person they want to talk to and discuss things with, but in general, a couple needs a Rav, a family needs a Rav, and a Das Torah, and a guide in life. So that's my take on the first part of your question. Now, you threw in something that some people take it literally and understand it well. Some people just throw it in to be diplomatic. It was actually in parentheses, these words of, I know that somebody who struggles more is a bigger tzaddik. But then you go on to ask if he's getting punished, if he'll also. Now, I think it's very important to understand what this really means. Somebody struggling more is bigger. And sometimes we just say it as if, you know, maybe I can't really judge him because he's struggling more, but there's no but. We really can't judge. We don't know. The Rambam in Hilchos Shiva, where he talks about the fact that only Hashem judges in the world to come, when you think about it, why does Hashem have to do this on his own? Right? Person gets up to Olam Haba, and there's a Bezen Shemala, whatever that means. Why can't Hashem just give over to the Malach a list of prices? This Avaira costs that much money, this mitzvah costs this much money, that much reward, punishment, just add it up in the computer, spit out a number, and we'll know what to do with this person. Why doesn't it work like that? And the answer is because it's so individualized and so dependent on how a person does things based on his own situation, based on his own characteristics, based on his own upbringing, based on his intelligence, based on his moods and his emotional and psychological and spiritual capacity, that nobody could judge that. Nobody could take into account how much the person struggled, how much was really expected of him, how much should he have done better, how much was it understood. We don't know these things. Nobody does. No malach could determine that. It's not just a checklist. Only Hashem could do that. Only Hashem could do that. So when you see somebody struggling and maybe falling through, right, and maybe failing more often than others, we have no idea what that looks like in the next world. And this is a big part of being done the Kavschus in general, because we really don't know. Somebody said an amazing story from Rav Moshe Halberstam from Yerushalayim. He was nifter and he came back to his son in a dream. And the dream was proven true because he told his son where to look for certain papers that he left over for Din Torah. But to make a long story short, the son asked him what's going on in Shemayim, and he said, I have three things to tell you from up here. One was that the severity of causing another yid pain is tremendous. Right? Somebody bothers someone, hurts someone, or whatever, causes pain to someone, that's a tremendous thing, taken very seriously in Shemayim. One was the great Nachasriach, the pleasure that Hashem has when people come together Friday night and they sing Shiris V'Zeshbuchas L'Kovet Shabbos, something that people underestimate. And the third thing was that when Chazal tell us that up in Shemayim, Elyoinim L'mata V'Tachtoinim L'mala, that in Shemayim, the people that in this world looked higher up are there, maybe lower down, and the people that looked here to be lower down are really higher up, the lopsidedness of what we expect to find and what we end up seeing up there is bo'ifin meguzim. It's exaggerated. It's exaggerated. I didn't believe it was on that level. That people who in this world look so simple are so great upstairs, and people that look so great are so simple. I didn't believe it was to that extent. Okay, so we hear regards from Shemayim. It's just interesting how sometimes we look at somebody here who's struggling and failing, and we have no idea how they look at it in Shemayim. So when you say that somebody who struggles is a bigger tzaddik, it doesn't mean that necessarily everyone who doesn't look like a tzaddik must be a tzaddik, but it's something to think about and really see it for what it is, at least understand that we don't know what it is. Very important. You see your husband struggling, he's having ups and downs. We don't know what this really looks like, and we have to be careful not to look at it differently than Hashem wants us to. The interesting is this: the interesting thing with this is that it's not only about other people; it's about yourself as well. So often we get self-critical. So often we look down at ourselves, and we don't know how maybe in Shemayim we're being looked at differently. We judge ourselves sometimes based on results. Maybe in Shemayim they don't look at it just based on results. Sometimes in this world we look at things about how we assess things based on how other people are seeing it. Maybe other people aren't impressed with what we're doing, and maybe in Shemayim they are impressed with what we're doing. Now we don't know this, so it's always hard to know when to be self-justifying and when to be self-critical. But it's something to think about. And I always like to add that even just the idea of Elyonim Lamata V'Tachtonim Lamala, on a personal level, a person comes to Shemayim and he's expecting, oh, they'll probably be very impressed with my Torah learning or my tzedakah or with my davening. And he comes up in Shemayim and says, no, that wasn't the thing. That's not, you know, we didn't take it so seriously. We weren't so impressed, but obviously, everyone will get schar for everything they do, but, you know, it wasn't so hard for you. You gave a lot of tzedakah, but you liked giving it, or you got attention for it, or you weren't a stingy person by nature. You know, it was that little thing that you thought was insignificant, or that was very hard for you, so you only did it once in a while, that in Shemayim, that was really chushev. So you come up there, and you almost don't recognize what's going on. Now, obviously, we all know that when a person comes up there, they realize that it is the Olam Amos. But you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how the things that you thought weren't so important are in Shemayim being given more significance than the things that you felt good about and you were expecting to get a lot of attention for. And in this world, people give you attention for. You know, you go to a shevibruch, you go to a dinner, and they're talking about you, and they're praising you. They're most often going to be praising you, it seems, based on this idea, maybe for things that in Shemayim they're not going to praise you for. It's the little things that sometimes count more. Now, again, it's not easy to judge people favorably. It's not always easy to see the good and assume that we're making a mistake and we don't see it for what it is. But it's important. We see something interesting, how people could go to a different community. You go, someone's visiting a community, you see all the time. And you come to a new community, you're so impressed. So, wow, wasn't that place? It was so amazing. I saw all the people there and all of this and the way they do things. You're so impressed by what they see somewhere else. When it comes back to your own community, that's where you see all the faults. And same thing with your family members, same thing, the closer you are to someone, whether it's because you're more familiar or because you care more about it or because you're more subjective, we see the faults. And when someone else comes to our community or our family or our Shabbos meal and they're so impressed, they're like, oh, there's nothing to be impressed with. It's just important to notice how very often perspective changes, not only from Shemayim to this world, which is also a big one, but even just, you know, seeing your husband up close and seeing his struggles and wanting to believe that maybe he is a bigger tzaddik because he's struggling, but on the other hand, come on, this is not what a husband's supposed to be. Who knows? Maybe it's, you know, it is a trick to see this in the people close to you, see all the good and see all that there is to be impressed about. But very often, it's all there. And same thing with children. You hear sometimes a good regards about your son, about your daughter, and you're like, if you'd only know. That's not the right attitude. The attitude is, if you would only know. If you'd only know how special your child is, maybe you would have a different perspective. Maybe you would see things differently. Now, I know that it irks you, and I know that you notice all the flaws and all the things that you take personal and that you blame yourself for, and all the deficiencies and all the shortcomings that you maybe see in yourself and you're seeing it in your child. But when you think about it, judging people favorably and understanding their struggle and not looking down at them because they're struggling, and even when they don't necessarily succeed and excel in a certain thing, it's very possible that others see it differently, and in Shemayim, they see it very differently. So this little parenthesis of yours was very important. It was a very good point. Now, helping a husband, right, you're talking about the fact that he's struggling, you want to know how much you should help him, or if you should help him, or if it's too much that you're helping him, or if it's not your responsibility. So there are two parts, two ideas. I'll mention it briefly. Two ideas that are very important when it comes to helping a spouse. And so say husband to wife, wife to husband, especially when it comes to personal things. Which means it doesn't sound like these are marriage issues. It doesn't sound like. You're talking about somebody who's struggling. I don't know what he's struggling with. It could be struggling with his own Avodas Hashem. Could be struggling with some addiction. Could be struggling with some personal stuff. Whatever it is, right? You're watching someone struggle and you're trying to help them. There are two things to be aware of, to be careful about. One is to not fall into a codependency where you become responsible for someone else's decisions or choices or behaviors. That codependency is when you feel responsible for someone else's moves, automatically it takes you over because now you're responsible. As long as somebody doesn't feel responsible, though, and they know, listen, it's your choices, but I'm here for you, I want to help you, that's not codependent. That's healthy. That's loving. That's caring. That's Yiddishlich. That's where Hashem made us. That we should be there for each other, right? Eiser connected. We help each other. The part where it becomes unhealthy and too extreme, and people start becoming aware of a problem, is when it becomes your responsibility. That's one. Another point is when it touches upon a control issue where somebody's making you do things for them, and you're not being given a choice, even if you don't feel responsible. But the fact that you're not being given a choice is also a problem sometimes. And it causes resentment, and it's good to know that you're not obligated, and it's good to be able to choose when and how you want to do things. If you're not being controlled, in other words, it is your choice, and you're not even feeling responsible, so you're doing it because you want to help someone, because you care for them and love them, what could be better than that? What could be better than that? What could be better than a spouse, whether husband or wife, that cares so much for the other one that they're willing to do whatever they could to help them? That's how it should be. It's when it takes you over, either emotionally or just technically because you're not being given a choice anymore, that's where it starts becoming a problem. It is clear that although we should try to help every yid, but when it comes to a spouse, a husband to a wife, there are abilities that only a spouse has. There are different sources in the Gemara, interestingly, somewhat contradictory, I should say, to who has a bigger influence on who. Does a man marrying a tzaddikus automatically become a tzaddik, and marrying someone who's not a tzaddikus automatically get pulled down? Or the other way around, a woman marrying a tzaddik will automatically become a tzaddik, and marrying someone who's not a tzaddik will automatically be not a tzaddik. And we find a chazal both ways, interestingly. I'm not going to mention now the sources in the Gemara, but we find both ways mentioned. We find that a man will depend on who he marries, and that's how he'll turn out. And we find that a woman will depend on who she marries, and that's how she'll turn out. But in any case, it's clear that there's a strong influence that one can have in the other, and there's a certain amount of help and support that one can give the other that nobody else could. So as long as it's being done willingly, with good intentions, and in an emotionally balanced way, I think it's a wonderful thing that a wife wants to help her husband and judges him favorably, sees the good in him, and is there for him at all times. Now, the end of your letter was if you should stay married to him and what Hashem wants. I mean, I'm not a Novi. I don't get my Navi is from Hashem straight. But chances are that I think Hashem wants you to stay married. I think Hashem wants everyone to stay married. We find in Chazal that, you know, people getting divorced, whatever Mizbayach Moira Demuas means, we know that it's clearly considered a tragedy. Now, it's a tragedy maybe that sometimes has to happen, sadly. Sometimes it's a bigger tragedy when they don't get divorced. That could also be. But it doesn't mean that Hashem wants someone to get divorced. And in general, even without getting clear messages from Hashem, I think we could generally assume that Hashem wants us to make our marriages work. Hashem wants us to build our marriage in a way that it should be Shechina Shriya Banayim. Hashem is not looking for us, Chas v'Shalom, to break up Yiddish Shtiber and take a place that Hashem wanted to be in and create that kind of problem. Chas v'Shalom, forget about just for the children, even just for the sake of marriage. Even if people say, well, I don't have kids yet, Shai, maybe get divorced. I don't think that's the way necessarily to look at it, unless there are other things that come to play that might make people think differently. Now, it's good because based on your question, it seemed like you just want to see it in writing, which means that you really know the answer. You know that Hashem wants you to stay married. You know that it's the right thing to do and you just want to see it. And it's good. It's good that you know it and it's good that you're admitting it. And sometimes people have to realize that I know the truth. Tell yourself what the truth is so that you feel comfortable with it. Sometimes people confuse themselves. They really know what's right, but they don't want to admit that they know what's right, and they start getting confused, they start asking the wrong people, and automatically they start getting influenced by the wrong kind of advice because they forgot that they really know the truth, and they're being convinced other things. Don't be convinced by somebody who's telling you Chazoshom otherwise. You know the truth, and that's why you're asking to hear it, and that's why I'm happy to tell it to you. Hashem wants you to stay married. It's not a question. The fact that you're married to an amazing father and husband, that's already a giveaway. Even if you would tell me that your husband isn't the best father and isn't the best husband, I would still tell you that I think Hashem wants you to make this work to the best of your ability, if you could, not a question. But being married to an amazing person and getting divorced, that's a real tragedy. That's a real tragedy, and unfortunately, people do that. The fact that your husband is struggling personally, like I started off with, I don't know what his struggle is. But remember, this is personal, not interpersonal. I'm not saying that everyone could tolerate every kind of personal struggle that the person they're married to might be struggling with. Right, sometimes living with somebody who's suffering from something takes a toll on the other person. But in general, if it's not interpersonal, if the person you're married to is struggling on their own with something, that's certainly not a reason to break a marriage. Generally, everything is generally, but it's just important to realize that. Sometimes people just can't handle the fact that they're married to somebody who's not what they wanted, or somebody who's dealing with stuff that's undesirable. And the taka isn't desirable, and still chas v'shalom not a reason to dump an amazing husband and father, or somebody who wants to be good, or somebody who wants to work on himself, or somebody who you could help. Not a question. So I'll end off by saying that life is never bliss, and all the people who tried getting out of any kind of discomfort, hoping that the next step in life will just be Gan Eden in this world, you know, you're talking about Olam Haba, we don't have it in this world. And we all have struggles, and we all have difficulties, and we accept them, and we try to see the good. And it sounds like, Baruch Hashem, there's so much good in your life, being married to an amazing husband and father. I mean, not a question, that's already an amazing thing, and somebody who's struggling and wants to be good, if you see him as a tzaddik, that's also an amazing thing. And I believe that you know, if you accept what Hashem gave you, and understand that Hashem gives everyone different things in life to work on, then I believe you'll see the good in it, and work with it, and build it, and do whatever you could, and do whatever you could to make this work. So I'll just recap that, yes, we do share journeys, and we also share missions in this world, although we each have our own independent and personal stuff as well, individuals. So I don't know where we end up in the next world, and how exactly we share our place up there, but I don't think that anyone's held responsible for someone else's decisions, and anyone will get punished for somebody else's wrongdoings. We should not judge people based on how they struggle, and we should, yes, certainly believe that it could be very different than the way it seems to us. And as long as you're not feeling responsible or obligated or controlled in helping someone else, I think you want to help whoever you're married to in whatever way you could, and stay married, because that's what Hashem wants from us. And like Yosef HaTzadik did, he didn't do just what he had to. He did whatever he was able to please his father and to do his duties in Hashem. And if we would do that with the people we married, with Hashem's help, by seeing the good in them and trying our best to be there for them, then we could all live together in Mitzvah. B'hav Ach V'shulim V'rayas.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.